What persuades you about Jesus as a divine being? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Matilde Frey, Professor of Biblical Studies in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. I'm your host and study guide author for this second lesson in the themes in the Gospel of John. And today we are going to look into the signs that point to Jesus as a divine being. My conversations partners today are again President Alex Bryan at Walla Walla University and Pastor Andreas Pekai at the University Church. What persuades you to think of Jesus as a divine being?
Well, I have to confess that I have been washed in that conviction since I was a child. I was taught to say, "Dear Jesus, thank you for my peanut butter sandwich," when I was 2 years old, right?
Yeah.
So even the notion of praying to Jesus indicates the status of divinity. So I would first answer your question by acknowledging that that's the way I think about the world.
Mm.
Later in life, as a pastoral theologian and historian, I have reaffirmed those early childhood teachings with scholarly reinforcement, if you will, by recognizing stories like we see in the Gospel of John that indicate that this is not merely another human being come on the scene, but there's something truly miraculous afoot, which the church, 2nd century, 3rd century, 4th century, it took them a while. By the way, as it should with big ideas, it should take you a while to come to grips with something, come to grips and hold the conviction that Jesus is divine. So that's my story, both as a child and later as an adult.
Yeah, and I would echo some of what you said. I grew up in a home where both my parents taught me and modeled for me a love for Jesus as God. And then as a teenager, I remember going through a period that I think is also appropriate when you're a teenager. You go from concrete black and white ideas to more abstraction and asking questions. I wouldn't call it a deconstruction, but I was asking appropriate questions. And one of the books which I read, and that was really helpful for me, was a few apologetics books, you know, Lee Strobel, giving you evidence, the case, you know, the case for Christ, and looking at the historicity of Jesus and why after the death of a 30-something-year-old man in the Middle East, would there be billions of people who continue to pledge allegiance to him and people who are willing to be ripped by wild animals for this person? But I would say, if I was to answer it right now, I'm increasingly challenged and also convicted by the fact that Jesus, as a divine being who had all power, this is what I found persuasive, was willing, like Philippians chapter 3 talks about, to give that power and not to use it over people, but to use it for people. And that is an incredible and I think an almost inhuman ability to condescend and to give power and influence away. The equivalent of me giving away my life for an ant. And I don't think that's a human thing. So that would be one thing that persuades me about Jesus as a divine being.
And at the same time, we have Jesus the human. Jesus comes into the flesh. Jesus comes to live and dwell and walk and eat. Jesus is sad. Jesus, the body language is very present in the gospel as well. There is blood and there is water at the end. At the story on the cross.
And sweat and tears.
Yes. The divine and the human come together. It's one of those major, major Christian doctrines. That is what we call Christology, isn't it? And is it possible that we are speaking here about a topic, about a written in this book that is addressing Christians in the second century of after Jesus? The church that is established at this point, and this gospel is now coming to them to like bring to them this message about God, divine, coming into the flesh.
Mm. I want to ask Alex a question. How would you connect this to John and what he writes later?
Well, he writes a lot later. What are you referencing?
So, because the question, I've got all of these light bulbs going off in my head just the way you framed the question. And it's amazing how questions can do that, sometimes more than trying to give an answer. But the question made me think, you said within the context of the second century. And I'm just wondering if there's something there.
Yeah, my reading of the New Testament often leads to that the persuasion in the direction of the Jewish community, the Jerusalem community, is very much around Messiah, messianic questions, mm-hmm. seeking to argue that Jesus is the Messiah, the prophesied one. Mm. But really, I think John does something a little bit different, or at least more expansive, where he is speaking into now what, second, third generation Christianity at this mm-hmm. point, mm-hmm. Men and women who have not participated as eyewitnesses. Now you're moving into Europe and Asia, North Africa. There's expansion of the Christian church. Mm-hmm. And so this really now is on Greco-Roman territory. This is now in a theological framework where you have all manner of gods, including the emperor who claims to be the Son of God. And I think I'll note that I think the claim of Jesus to be the Son of God really is a bit of a political statement, right, that is pushing against, but also it's a statement that Jesus is a legitimate expression in this larger theological framework that needs to be taken seriously.
Yes.
So even the beginning of John, in the beginning was the Word, or the Logos, mm-hmm. is just charged with this Greco-Roman reality, these philosophical, you know, great minds and theological minds mm-hmm. that you see later with, even though Paul wrote earlier, but you see expressed at least in Paul's engagement in Athens, in Corinth, and other places. Mm,
that's so good. And I also wonder, maybe one of you can help me with this. This is a legitimate question. In the smaller books John writes, he seems to be doing a lot of just work with maybe a Gnostic heresy. Am I remembering that correctly? And if that's the case, do you think perhaps this really enfleshed, incarnate, embodied, sweating, bleeding Jesus is important, and it perhaps transcends, or there's a bridge over to 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John when he's fighting people who might be saying, nah, you know, Jesus is, he's an idea and he's not a body, and John is going, no, you know, he was a real person, and I was there when he was bleeding and sweating and groaning and moaning and suffering for us. Long question.
I have the impression that what John is doing in this gospel
yes.
is kind of like bringing things from the past, bringing them as memories
okay.
into and putting them into a framework that today we might call like an apologetic way of discussing Jesus.
Okay.
So here is what John himself could say, I witnessed. Mm-hmm. Let's say a miracle like the Cana wedding or the healing of the man at the pool, for example. But that is now in the past already.
As 50, in writing, yes.
Probably more than 50 or even 60 years mm-hmm. in the past. And so he's bringing that into the present mm-hmm. and bringing Jesus in there, and suddenly Jesus can say, I am in the present. So the Jesus who performs the miracle, the divine Jesus, now becomes the present Jesus in the written text of this gospel. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's an idea I've never considered. The divine Jesus, let me see if I got it right, the divine Jesus that John, no, it's the opposite. You have to tell me again.
Maybe say it that way. The divine Jesus who acts in history.
Yes.
The divine and the historical Jesus, basically, mm-hmm. now becomes the central divine figure in the gospel that is written down or preached mm-hmm. to the Christians in the second century, at the beginning of the second century. And this divine Jesus needs to be just as present at this point, let's say in the year 110 maybe, needs to be just as present as Jesus was in 30
I'm with you.
AD.
Well, then, I would say in that case, what John is doing, it's some really beautiful, poetic, and apologetic writing for those who did not have the same lived experience as he did. Mm. And in that case, I think it's a beautiful gospel anyway, but it's a beautiful and dense gospel stating a case for an experience he had that others are now being told secondhand, so they can understand the importance of the divine Jesus and experience him in their presence. So, yes, I'd agree.
Now, since I have both of you here as pastors, isn't that what you as a pastor is doing when you stand in front of the congregation, that you bring that Jesus to the congregation on this Sabbath, for example, because this Jesus who exists and lives in the historical time of the past now becomes the present Jesus, the incarnate Jesus. And we will discuss that next week again, right? Mm. But this Jesus has to become incarnate, the Jesus in the flesh today.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. It's interesting that you have John 13 and forward the gifting of the Holy Spirit, which is very much a validation of this live and present Jesus in a new generation, which again shows up in future generations, including our own. Absolutely. John is writing as a true historian at this point. He's a generation or two removed.
Yes.
He's wanting to lock down for these fresh baby Christians that Jesus is alive and well, that Jesus is present in them. And their future can be tied to his ongoing presence. Mm. So I think that's exactly right. And yes, I think that he realizes that the two sort of fixed points that need to be secured are this present divinity of Jesus, this ongoing divinity, and that he was grounded in human flesh.
Mm.
And those two sort of fixed points are critical for the whole Christian project.
Mm.
So the statements, the seven statements that Jesus has, I am the bread of life, I am the door, and so on, are expressions of that presence of Jesus. And he takes it even from the story of Moses in the Old Testament, where God is the I am in the present time. Thank you so much for this great conversation together, Pastor Andreas Bekai and Alex Bryan. And also thank you to our program engineer, Corin Bailey, this time, and to all of you who listen in to us. For The Good Word, I'm Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.